Hello and welcome to Speak the Words of Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango. And I have freeze-dried Starburst.
All right, well, I am canceling the podcast tonight because I am jealous and upset at that knowledge. I would like that.
Do you like freeze-dried candy?
I just like Starburst. It doesn't matter what kind of...
It's Starburst, but crunchy, and it's amazing.
See, it sounds very good.
You should order some on Amazon.
I will. This podcast is not about freeze-dried Starburst, though. This podcast is about the Cosmere.
Do you think that on one of the planets they would have developed the technology to freeze-dry stuff?
Absolutely. We'll talk about it eventually. There is some planets out there that I would assume are very technologically advanced for a specific reason.
They should sell that at the next Dragonsteel freeze-dried candy from a specific planet.
Anyways, this is a podcast where I slowly but surely walk Mango through the story of the Cosmere, currently on Oathbringer, the third book of the Stormlight Archive. Last time, we continued, you know, moving through Shadesmar with the crew. Everybody's sad.
Don't be sad, be glad.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll help him. them, I guess, both, because Shallan's also not doing well.
Oh, yeah, Kaladin had a vision of Dalinar, and now he needs to go to Thalen City. Dalinar, went, and he ended up getting the, thrill back. And
that,
now he just
so that was actually in that was in Yakaved, that was in Vaidenar, but yes. So yeah, he also got excommunicated from the Voren Church.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
That was a thing as well, and he started to drink again as he returned back. It was also he did something to the Stormfather that the Stormfather did not like.
He summoned him as a sword so that he could get away from Vaidenar, because he was going crazy from the thrill.
And it's important to note, it wasn't really a sword. He more described it as like this object made of yellow light rather than a sword. Like, it was more of, it wasn't metal. It was like just yellow power. In Shadesmar, they got on a boat, captained by Reachers or Lightspren, I believe. I believe Reachers or Lightspren. And they took the group to Celebrant, which is a big city in
Shadesmar.
Wait, I
thought Reachers were made out of copper.
They're called Lightspren, but they're made out of like a metallic.
So really they conduct heat, and then that just translates as light in the physical realm.
Reachers are known as Lightspren, yes. And so Lightspren are what the Spren that is around Venli is. That's a Lightspren.
Oh.
The like little puff of light that keeps popping up. I think we're ready to jump into this episode. Yeah, they arrived. They split up into two groups. Adolin, Kaladin, and Syl are going to go check out the city and search for supplies. And the rest of them are going to get passage on another boat. Oh, and we also had Zeth. Zeth swore the second ideal of the Knights of the Skybreakers. Tonight, we start with chapter 102, titled Celebrant. It has Shallan's symbol, and the epigraph reads, Moloch was said to grant visions of the future at different times, but most commonly at the transition between realms, when a soul was nearing the Tranquiline Halls. From Hesse's Mythica, page 144. This chapter starts in Kaladin's POV. Kaladin, Adolin, and Syl, who is still disguised as an Alethi, are roaming the city of Celebrant after having had their Stormlight exchanged for money. The city is filled with different kinds of Spren, Reachers, one made entirely of vines like Adolin's sword, and Spren with inky black skin I've described Jasnah's Spren looking like. Cryptics pass, huddled close together, Spren with cracked stone for skin with light shining from within. There are Spren that seem to be made of ash, and all the Spren don't seem to mix much. Syl tells them that the building materials are acquired through a process similar to what Eco did with the ice, and Adolin points out that everyone is wearing a mishmash of clothing. Adolin asks where kid Spren come from, and Syl tells him that there are places where power coalesces and parts start to become aware. Adult Spren go there and come back with kids, but it's very rare. Spren go hundreds of years before doing that. She says that time is different for Spren and they don't grow much without the bond. Adolin stops to buy some clothing, and Syl gets an oversized poncho and large floppy hat to wear. Syl says that the difference in price for stuff in Shadesmar depends on how permanent it is. They stop by a weapons shop, and Kaladin is confused by a ridiculously expensive silver chain, which is from a different planet. The exact significance is not clear, but on that planet called Threnody, silver can harm, like, these beings called, like, Shades, I think they are. Silver is special in the Cosmere, similar to how aluminum is. It's not inert, it's almost like it harms investiture instead of being resistant to it, is kind of my theory, but I'm not entirely sure. Adolin buys them two harpoons so that they have some sort of weapon, and Kaladin notices that Syl is using her new outfit to hide her face from the rest of the Spren. As Adolin stops to buy some more canned food, Kaladin is drawn to an art vendor. Nestled among the paintings was a small one painted from thick strokes of oil, white and red, with lines of black. Like nine shadows, he thought, with the figure kneeling in the middle. And we cut to Shallan's point of view. Shallan and Azure are trying to find a boat that will...
For so long.
I was. They're trying to find a boat to take them to Cultivation's Perpendicularity, but all the Spren are afraid to go there as Void Spren warships have been patrolling the area. They say that the enemy appeared in the last few months and immediately seized the Perpendicularity with the assistance of the Fused. Shallan considers going to the Shattered Plains instead and hoping that she can get the Oathgate there to take them back, but they finally find a boat going to some place called Lasting Integrity, which is in the direction of Thalen City where Kaladin wants to go. But they're told by a passing Spren that the captain of that boat would not take human passengers. They start to have luck with another captain who says that he's willing to negotiate with them, but will have to wait until after an upcoming inspection. Shallan notices that Eco's ship is currently being inspected, and Azure yanks Shallan into an alleyway. She points at a Cultivation Spren that was inspecting Eco's ship and who was currently reporting to a Fused that was hovering above the ship. We cut back to Kaladin's point of view. Kaladin stepped up to the painting. Haunting, beautiful shapes, mostly red and whites, but with a figure at the center, throwing out nine shadows.
Oh.
Dalinar, he thought. I failed Elokar. After all we went through, after the rains and confronting Moash, I failed. And I lost your city. A Reacher comes over and tells Kaladin that the painting is from the far-off Court of Gods. It reaffirms to Kaladin that he needed to get to Thalen City. Adolin runs over and tells him that something is wrong. So this painting is one of the ones that, like, Lightsong would look at.
Yeah.
In Warbreaker.
Except not, because unless it's, like, thousands of years old.
Yeah, no, but it's from Nalthus. It's from the similar idea of, like, a god would look at this painting and see into the future, kind of, with it. We come back to Shallan's point of view. Shallan is yelling at the person in charge of the docks, asking why they hadn't been informed that Void Spren had control of the city. The official tells them that the Void Spren had taken control a few months back and that two Fused check on them from time to time. He says that one of them is insane, and then he also adds that the other one, Kryl, is running the inspections, and on second thought, he might also be insane. Azure interrupts, saying that Kryl has just set Eco's ship on fire. We cut back to Kaladin's point of view. Kaladin returns to Syl, who is surrounded by Spren, pointing and talking. Kaladin pulls her away and asks why they all recognize her. She says that there's an enormous reward for her posted at every port in Shadesmar with her description and pictures. She says that the other Honor Spren view her as a disobedient child and want her returned to their capital of Lasting Integrity. They start to make their way back to the docks and see smoke in the air. We cut back to Shallan's point of view again. The Fused tosses Eco to the ground and flies over to the building that Shallan is hiding in. Shallan quickly creates a light weaving to make them look like the Reacher sailors. The Fused goes up to the city official and asks them why they didn't inform him of humans arriving in the city. The city official tells him that the humans went into the marketplace, and the Fused departs, telling the official to put out the boat fire, and that when they're done, they're fired. The Spren official is excited that the oaths are being spoken again and tells Shallan and the others to get on a boat while he stalls the Fused. We cut back to Kaladin's point of view. Kaladin pulls Syl and Adolin into a tent right as the Fused flies by them. They make it to the dock, and Syl points out that one of the boats is an Honor Spren vessel. They run into Shallan, who tells them that the Fused had lit the fire, and that the only boat that had considered taking them was currently fleeing at full speed. Kaladin suggests trying to take over a boat by force, but Adolin says that it'll take too long. They start to argue over what to do, and Syl tries to chime in, but they all ignore her. Kaladin trails off as he realizes that she's no longer with them. Syl runs down the dock, removing her disguise and waving at the departing boat. It's crewed by Honor Spren, who recognize her as Sylfrenna, the ancient daughter. They stop, and Syl boards the ship, followed by the rest of them. The Fused appeared as they finish boarding, but seems reluctant to engage when he sees that they're on an Honor Spren boat. The Honor Spren on the boat begin to tie Syl up, and she tells Kaladin not to intervene yet. More ships flee the city, and Kaladin sees the Fused watching them as they sail away before it flies off in the other direction. That is the end of the chapter. Chapter 103 is titled Hypocrite. It has Dalinar's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "Many cultures speak of the so-called death rattles that sometimes overtake people as they die. Tradition ascribes them to the Almighty, but I find too many to be seemingly prophetic. This will be my most contentious assertion, I am sure, but I think these are the effects of Moloch persisting in our current times. Proof is easy to provide. The effect is regionalized and tends to move across Roshar. This is the roving of the unmade." From Hesse's Mythica, page 170.
Wait, Moloch is the same one that provided the ability to see into the future, right?
Yes. He's the one that causes the death rattles, yeah.
I thought that he was also the one who did the crystal ball thingy that Kaladin saw. Like, that he's just able to give people the ability to see into the future. Or is it just the death rattles?
It's just the death rattles. Okay. He gives it to them, like, as they're dying, as they're passing between to the spiritual realm.
I thought that's what someone was saying last time.
The person said that you need to be really skilled with fortune in order to see the future, but he didn't expand on what that actually means.
That reminds me of, like, burning metal from Mistborn.
Yeah, fortune is an aspect all throughout the Cosmere that underlines all the magic systems. What Hoyt is doing to know where he needs to be but not why is a version of using fortune. Dalinar wakes up and finds himself in one of the visions. He calls out to the Stormfather, but he doesn't respond. He's in one of the rooms where he had met Nohadan, the author of The Way of Kings. He walks towards a balcony, which is giving off an incredible light that is so intense that he has to look away. He walks through another door into a different room, where a softer light shone through the window, and Dalinar wonders how the sun could be pointed in both directions. He turned back to the room he'd been in and found that no light peeked in from under the door. He turns and sees Nohadan as an older man, writing what he assumes is the Way of Kings. Nohadan tells him that it's actually a shopping list. He tells Dalinar that it's good to see him again, and he asks if he's been having a hard time lately. Nohadan asks Dalinar to come with him to the market while he shops. They walk into the room that Dalinar had just been in, and the bright light from the balcony was now gone. Now he could see the city from it. Nohadan jumped off the balcony, sliding down a banner glowing with stormlight. Dalinar draws in the stormlight and leaps off after the man. He's shocked that Nohadan is walking the town without guards, and Nohadan says that he walked all the way to Yirithiru on his own. Dalinar says that Nohadan had just used one of the Oath Gates to get to Yirithiru, and Nohadan corrects him that he walked the whole way to the caverns at the base of the mountains. They walk through the markets, Dalinar taking in all the brightly colored buildings. They enter a tent where a merchant was selling grain, and Dalinar felt the ground shake. Nohadan ignores the shaking and buys some grain from the trader, overpaying so that the man can give the extra money to starving orphans. "You are having trouble, my friend," Nohadan said. "Your life is unfair. Being a ruler is a burden, not merely a privilege. You taught me that. But storms, Nohadan, I can't see any way out. We've gathered the monarchs, yet the drums of war beat in my ears, demanding. For every step I make with my allies, we seem to spend weeks deliberating. The truth whispers in the back of my mind. I could best defend the world if I could simply make the others do as they should." Nohadan nodded. "So why don't you?" "You didn't. I tried and failed. That led me to a different path. You're wise and thoughtful. I'm a warmonger, Nohadon, I've never accomplished anything without bloodshed. He heard them again, the tears of the dead, Evi, the children, flames burning a city. Tell me, my friend, you talk about your burdens and the difficulty of the decision. What is the cost of a principle? The cost? There shouldn't be a cost to being principled. Isn't a principle about what you give up, not what you gain? Are you implying that nobody should have principles because there's no benefit to them? Hardly. But maybe you shouldn't be looking for life to be easier because you choose to do something that is right. Personally, I think life is fair. It's merely that often you can't immediately see what balances it. If you'll forgive a somewhat blatant metaphor, I've grown fond of them. You might say I wrote an entire book about them. This is different from the other visions. What's going on? Dalinar spins and sees a thunderclast walk up to them. It leaned down and stretched out its hand to Nohadon, who touched it. This is quite the nightmare you've created, Nohadon said. What does that thunderclast represent, I wonder? Pain. Tears. Burdens. I'm a lie, Nohadon. A hypocrite. Sometimes, a hypocrite is nothing more than a man who is in the process of changing. Wait, hadn't Dalinar said that? Back when he'd felt stronger? More certain? All things exist in three realms, Dalinar. The physical, what you are now. The cognitive, what you see yourself as being. The spiritual, the perfect you. The person beyond pain, and error, and uncertainty. You've said the oaths, but do you understand the journey? Do you understand what it requires? You've forgotten one essential part, one thing that without which there can be no journey. What is the most important step a man can take? Dalinar awoke, huddled in his bed in Yirithiru. A mostly empty bottle of wine rested on the table. There was no storm. It hadn't been a vision. Something bloomed inside of him. Not really a new memory, but it suddenly became as crisp as if he'd experienced it yesterday. The night of Gavilar's funeral. And that is the end of the chapter. What is the most important step a man can take?
Acknowledging that he needs to change.
Interesting perspective. This is the image. This is the device that that Dalinar has talked about wearing recently that Navani made for him. The words translated read, touch the gems in the correct combination to release the shock from the front nodes that will incapacitate an attacker. And then there's the top view, the side view, and it shows the bottom, the one that is slightly the one on the right, like the top down view from the on the right is the storm piece. That is the piece that is ticking down to the next high storm, and the other one is the time piece, which is the clock.
So there's a time piece and a storm piece.
Yes. It tells him when the next high storm is going to come and also keeps track of the actual time.
So it's a smartwatch.
Yes. And also can shock the shit out of people that try to attack you.
So it's a smartwatch with a taser.
Exactly.
Nice.
The next chapter is chapter 104, titled Strength. It has Navani's symbol. And the epigraph reads, Asher Tamarn, the heart of the revel, is the final of the three great mindless unmade. His gift to men is not prophecy or battle focus, but a lust for indulgence. Indeed, the great debauchery recorded from the court of Byala in 480, which led to a dynastic collapse, might be attributable to the influence of Asher Tamarn. From Hesse's Mythica, page 203. Navani Kolin had some practice holding a kingdom together. During Gavilar's last days, he had grown strange. Few knew how dark he'd grown, but they had seen the eccentricity. As Gavilar had grown more and more distracted, Navani herself had worked to keep squabbling light eyes from sundering the kingdom. She enters a room filled with the other high princes present at Yirithiru, Sabariol, Aladar, Haytham, and Bethob, represented by his wife. Navani was escorted in by members of Bridge Four, symbols of the Knights Radiant. The high princes ask Navani to meet with them as they are worried about Dalinar's condition. She says that he is still their best chance for survival and that he will push through the pain. They say that the tower is not able to accommodate the number of people in the long run. They're running out of food, labor, and building supplies. They can't afford weak leadership. Navani drew in a breath. Hold it together. She just had to give Dalinar time, even if deep down a part of her was angry. Angry that his pain so overshadowed her growing fear for Elokar and Adolin. Angry that he got to drink himself to oblivion, leaving her to pick up the pieces. but she had learned that nobody was strong all the time, not even Dalinar Kolin. Love wasn't about being right or wrong, but about standing up and helping when your partner's back was bowed. He would likely do the same for her someday. The High Princess asks her if this is a secret plot for Dalinar to conquer the world, and she reasserts that he desires unity, not dominion. She tells him that they have to figure out how the Tower once grew food so that they could do it, grow it as well. They also had to figure out how the running water worked. 3 hours later, they finish their meeting, and Devani departs with the Bridgemen, apologizing about how boring it had been. Leighton and Haber say that it was preferable to someone trying to kill them. She was amazed at how positive they could be. They were certain that Kaladin would return any day now. They put on a positive face, even though Teft had been hauled before the police for public intoxication days before. Navani had quietly dealt with it. She went down to the libraries below Yirithiru, where Yasna was working. The Bridgemen left her to go talk to Renarin, who was working in the room as well. Yasna says that they need more translators for some project. Navani says that Renarin should take some time away from the library and hang out with the Bridgemen, but Yasna says that his powers need more study. Navani decides to just talk to her nephew behind Yasna's back, as trying to argue with her daughter was impossible. Navani mentions that the Dawn Chant is close to being cracked, and this information seems to trouble Yasna. Navani asks if the gemstones had held any secrets about how the tower worked, and Yasna says that they were mostly personal historical accounts. Navani finds this discouraging, and Yasna starts to lecture her mother about the importance of personal accounts. A young scribe calls Yasna away, and Navani looks down at the papers that Yasna had been looking through. Most of them was an account of Renarin's messages during the lead-up to the Everstorm. Why had Yasna collected all of these? "I have a description for you, finally, Yasna," another said. "We've convinced the Radiant that Lift found in Yadaw to visit Azamir. Though she has not yet arrived, you can find sketches of her Spren companion here. It looks like the shimmer you see on a wall when you shine light through a crystal." Navani sets the papers aside, picks up translations of the gemstone messages, and goes to check on Dalinar. So, and that's the end of the chapter. But so, remember the stump from Edge Dancer ended up being a Truth Watcher like Renarin.
Oh yeah.
And Yasna has a sketch of the stump's Spren in the same pile of papers that she also has accounts of Renarin's visions of the Everstorm.
Because they're both Truth Watchers.
Chapter 105, Spirit, Mind, and Body. It has Dalinar's symbol, and it's from 6 years ago. It's his flashback symbol. Dalinar is watching Gavilar's internment in the catacombs of Kolinar. "Spirit, mind, and body," the Ardent said. "Death is the separation of the three. The body remains in our realm to be reused. The spirit rejoins the pool of divine essence that gave it birth, and the mind goes to the Tranquiline Halls to find its reward. Gavilar the Majestic, first king of Alethkar in the new Kolin dynasty, 32nd High Prince of the Kolin Princedom, heir of the Sunmaker and blessed of the Almighty. His accomplishments will be lauded by all, and his dominion extends to the hereafter. Already he leads men again on the battlefield, serving the Almighty in the true war against the Voidbringers. Our king's war has moved to the Tranquiline Halls. The end of our war for Roshar did not end our duty to the Almighty. Think upon your callings, men and women of Alethkar. Think of how you might learn here and be of use in the next world." Dalinar clenched his hands, angry at the Almighty. Dalinar should not have lived to see his brother die. Dalinar felt like all the others were watching him, expecting him to be drunk. He had started controlling his vices lately, confining his drinking to monthly trips away from Kolinar. He said they were just to let Elokar practice ruling while Gavilar had spent time abroad, but in truth, he drank himself to oblivion during them. In Kolinar, he controlled his drinking and never again yelled at his sons. Of course, he had not controlled it the night Gavilar had been fighting for his life. "If you control your drinking when back in Kolinar," a part of him challenged, "what happened at the feast? Where were you when Gavilar was fighting for his life?" "We must use King Gavilar as a model for our own lives," the Ardent was saying. We must remember that our lives are not our own. This world is but the skirmish to prepare us for the true war." "And after that?" "After that what?" "After we win back the Tranquiline Halls, what then? No more war?" "You needn't worry, Blackthorn. Once that war is won, the Almighty will certainly provide for you another conquest." She smiled comfortingly. Dalinar looked down at his brother's corpse, which stared upward. "Brother," he'd said, "follow the codes tonight. There is something strange upon the winds." Dalinar needed something to drink. The Ardent read a poem written by Navani, and Dalinar was struck by it, searching for his husband's widow. She stood with King Elokar and Yasna, who pulled away from her mother's touch and stalked away. Everyone grew quiet as a soulcaster approached Gavilar and transformed him into a statue. They stood him up and pushed him into a row with the other former kings of Alethkar.
Oh, that's crazy.
I'll have vengeance. It is, isn't it? So, okay, this is a theory that people have about why Vashir might be here. People theorize that potentially, and I don't know if this is going to be happen, but it would be cool. Potentially, what if at some point, when they're down and out, Vashir awakened all the statues of the previous kings of Alethkar?
That would be cool, but also very terrifying. It'd be cool.
Yes, I don't know that I personally believe it, because I think it would give Vashir a little bit too much of a role in Stormlight, but it's possible.
But he could.
He could. It'd be very cool. "I'll have vengeance, mother," Elokar whispered. "I'll have it." The king spun upon the gathered light eyes. "You've each come to me privately to give support, while I demand you swear it in public. Today we make a pact to hunt those who did this. Today, Alethkar goes to war." He was greeted by stunned silence. "I swear it," Toril Sadius said. "I swear to bring vengeance to the traitorous Parshmen, your majesty. You can depend upon my sword." Good, Dalinar thought, as others spoke up. This would hold them together. Even in death, Gavilar provided an excuse for unity. Dalinar left, thinking about how he would have to become the Blackthorn again to avenge his brother. That man had been a monster. Adolin follows him out, and Dalinar tells him that he needs to be alone. He tells Adolin to return to Elokar and swear on the Vengeance Pact for their family. Dalinar continued onward, Gavilar's stare judging him, the cries of people dying in the rift. By the time he reached the steps, he was practically running. He reached his chambers and scrabbled for the keys. Bliss waited inside. No, not Bliss. Oblivion. Good enough. His hands wouldn't stop shaking. Follow the codes tonight. Dalinar's hands trembled and he dropped the keys. There was something strange upon the winds. Screams for mercy. "Get out of my head, all of you, get out!" In the distance, a voice. "You must find the most important words a man can say. Those words came to me from one who claimed to have seen the future. How is this possible?" I asked in return. "Have you been touched by the void?" The reply was laughter. "No, sweet king. The past is the future, and as each man has lived, so must you. So I can but repeat what has been done before. In some things, yes. You will live, you will hurt, you will dream, and you will die. Each man's past is your future." "Then what is the point?" I asked. "If all has been seen and done." "The question," she replied, "is not whether you will live, hurt, dream, and die. It is what you will love, why you will hurt, when you will dream, and how you will die. This is your choice. You cannot pick the destination, only the path." Dalinar dropped the keys again, sobbing. There was no escape. He would fall again. Wine would consume him like a fire consumed a corpse, leaving only ash. There was no way out. "This started my journey, and this begins my writings. I cannot call this book a story, for it fails at its most fundamental to be a story. It is not one narrative, but many. And though it has a beginning, here on this page, my quest can never truly end. I wasn't seeking answers. I felt that I had those already. Plenty and multitude from 1,000 different sources. I wasn't seeking myself. This is a platitude that people have ascribed to me, and I find the phrase lacks meaning. In truth, by leaving, I was seeking only one thing. A journey." He turned from his door and walked down the corridor. Inside the royal reading room, he found Yasna with a huge tome set before her. She read to herself, scowling. "What is that book?" Yasna started. She wiped her eyes, smearing the makeup. "This is where my father got the quote. The one he wrote as he died. Only a few knew of that." In case you don't remember, when Gavilar died, he told Zeth to tell Dalinar to search for the most important words a man can say.
And Zeth wrote it down.
Yes, but they all think that Gavilar did it. So they all think that Gavilar was smarter than he was because they think he learned how to read and write. "What book is it?" "An old text," Yasna said. "Ancient, once well regarded. It's associated with the Lost Radiance, so nobody references it anymore. There has to be some secret here. A puzzle behind my father's last words. A cipher? But what?" Dalinar settled down into one of the seats. "Will you read it to me?" Yasna met his eyes, chewing her lip as she'd always done as a child. Then she read in a clear, strong voice, starting over from the first page. He had expected her to stop after a chapter or two, but she didn't, and he didn't want her to. Dalinar listened. People came to check on them. Some brought Yasna water to drink. For once, he didn't ask them for anything. All he wanted was to listen. He understood the words, but at the same time, he seemed to be missing what the book said. It was a sequence of vignettes about a king who left his palace to go on a pilgrimage. It was so unpretentious, so different from the boasts of society or the battlefield. Just a series of stories, their morals ambiguous. It took almost 8 hours to finish, but Yasna never gave any indication that she wanted to stop. When she read the last word, Dalinar found himself weeping again. Yasna dabbed at her own eyes. She had always been so much stronger than he was, but here they shared an understanding. This was their send-off to Gavilar's soul. This was their farewell. Yasna walked over to Dalinar as he stood up. They embraced, saying nothing. After a few moments, she left. He walks over and touches the book. He stands there until Adolin appears and says that the king wants to send an advance team to the Shattered Plains. Dalinar volunteers himself for it. Dalinar could not choose his end, but perhaps his path. The old magic can change a person, Evie had said, make something great of them. Dalinar stood up taller. I've been a poor father these last few years. Nonsense, Adolin said. I've been a poor father, Dalinar repeated. To you and your brother both. You should know how proud I am of you. Adolin beamed. Dalinar tells them that they will go to war together, and he will show Adolin what it means to be a man of honor. But Dalinar will have to go first with the advance force. He says that they will sail instead of march, as it would be faster. It was sound. Sound enough that when one of Dalinar's ships was delayed and Dalinar himself remained in port, nobody would think it strange. Dalinar did get himself into trouble. He would swear his men and sailors to secrecy and travel a few months out of his way before continuing on to the Shattered Plains. Evie had said the old magic could transform a man. It was about time he started trusting her. And that is the end of the chapter. And that is the last Dalinar flashback for this part. We're going to start part 5 with the old magic trip. We have one more chapter to do tonight. It is chapter 106. It is titled Law is Light, and it has Zeth's symbol. The epigraph reads, I find Ba'ido Mishram to be the most interesting of the Unmade. She is said to have been keen of mind, a high princess among the enemy forces, their commander during some of the desolations. I do not know how this relates to the ancient god of the enemy named Odium. From Hesse's Mythica, page 224. Zeth of Shinovar flew with the Skybreakers for 3 days southward. They stopped to recover hidden supplies, each time Nin acted like he had just left the hiding spots, but they had discovered each of them overgrown by centuries. On the fourth day, they reached Marat. They landed there, Nail telling the other Skybreakers to continue on to a nearby town. Nail and Zeth flew to a different town that had been crushed by war. Aw, the sword said from his back. We missed the fun. That tyrant in Tukar, Zeth said. He decided to end his war against Imul and expand eastward? No, Nin said. This is a different danger. Can you read that writing above the doorway, Zeth's son Naturo? It's in a local language. I don't know the script, Eboshi. It says justice, Nin said. This was a courthouse. Zeth followed the herald up the steps and into the main room of the ruined courthouse. In here, they found blood on the floor, but no bodies. The ones you call parchment name themselves the Singers, Nin said. They took this town and pressed the survivors into labor at some docks farther along the coast. Was what happened here justice, Zeth's son Naturo? How could it be? Ordinary people living ordinary lives, suddenly attacked and murdered? A poor argument. What if the lord of this city had stopped paying his taxes, then forced his people to defend the city when higher authorities arrived and attacked? Is not a prince justified in maintaining order in his lands? Sometimes it is just to kill ordinary people. But that did not happen here. You said this was caused by an invading army. Yes, Nin said softly. This is the fault of invaders. That is true. You are in a unique position, Zeth's son Naturo. You will be the first to swear the oaths of a Skybreaker in a new world. A world where I have failed. They found steps near the back wall. I visited Ishar, Nin continued. You call him Ishu Sun God. He has always been the most wise of us. I did not want to believe what had happened. Zeth nodded. I worked for thousands of years to prevent another desolation. Ishar warned me of the danger. Now that honor is dead, other radiance might upset the balance of the Oath Pact, might undermine certain measures we took, and give an opening to the enemy. He stopped at the top of the steps and looked down at his hand, where a glistening shard blade appeared. one of the two missing honor blades. Zeth's people had care of 8. Once, long ago, it had been 9. Then this one had vanished. They walked along a loft at the top of the courtroom. "You should draw me," the sword said. "And do what, Sword Nimi?" "Fight him. I think he might be evil. He is one of the heralds, one of the least evil things in the world." "Huh. Doesn't bode well for your world, then. Anyway, I'm better than that sword he has. I can show you." Zeth joined an inn beside the loft's window. In the distance, a large bay glistened. Many masts of ships gathered there, figures buzzing around them. "I have failed," Nin repeated. "And now, for the people, justice must be done. A very difficult justice, Zeth, son Naturo, even for my Skybreakers. We will endeavor to be as passionless and logical as you, Eboshi." Nin laughed. "Me? No, Zeth, son Naturo, I am hardly passionless. This is the problem. I am different from how I once was. Worse, perhaps? Despite all that, a part of me wishes to be merciful." "And is mercy such a bad thing, Eboshi?" "Not bad, merely chaotic. If you look through the records in this hall, you will find the same story told again and again. Leniency and mercy. Men set free despite crimes, because they were good fathers, or well-liked in the community, or in the favor of someone important. Some of those who are set free change their lives and go on to produce for society. Others recidivate and create great tragedies. The thing is, Zeth, son Naturo, we humans are terrible at spotting which will be which. The purpose of the law is so we do not have to choose, so our native sentimentality will not harm us." He looked down again at his sword. "You," he said to Zeth, "must choose a third ideal. Most Skybreakers choose to swear themselves to the law, and follow with exactness the laws of whatever lands they visit. That is a good option, but not the only one. Think wisely and choose. Yes, Eboshi, there are things you must see and things you must know before you can speak. The others must interpret what they have sworn before, and I hope they will see the truth. You will be the first of a new order of Skybreakers." He looked back out the window. "The singers allowed the people of this town to return here to burn their dead. A kinder gesture than most conquerors would allow." "Eboshi, may I ask you a question? Law is light and darkness does not serve it. Ask and I will answer. I know you are great, ancient, and wise, but to my lesser eyes, you do not seem to obey your own precepts. You hunted Surgebinders, as you said. I obtained legal permission for the executions I performed. Yes, but you ignored many lawbreakers to pursue these few. You had motives beyond the law, Eboshi. You were not impartial. You brutally enforced specific laws to achieve your ends. This is true. So is this just your own sentimentality? In part, though I have certain leniencies. The others have told you of the fifth ideal, the ideal where the Skybreaker becomes the law." Nin held out his empty left hand. A shard blade appeared there, different and distinct from the honor blade he carried in the other. "I am not only a herald, but a Skybreaker of the fifth ideal. Though I was originally skeptical of the Radiance, I believe I am the only one who eventually joined his own order. And now, Zeth's son Naturo, I must tell you of the decision we heralds made long ago, on the day that would become known as Ahar Etium. The day we sacrificed one of our own to end the cycle of pain and death." And that is the end of the chapter.
And I don't get to find out.
No! Well, I mean, you know what happened at Ahar Etium.
Well, yeah, but not why.
But I will say that Nail, when he showed up last time, said that there were two secrets that they needed to learn. So the first of which is what happened at Ahar Etium, which we understand what happened there at this point. They gave up because they couldn't handle the torture anymore, and they felt that Taln would be able to hold the Oath Pact by himself.
Kind of.
The second secret...
probably the one for the Recreants.
Possibly. The second secret the book is going to tell you next Monday. We're going to get to it. It's just the book is teasing you up to it. But yes, Nail is the only herald to have also joined his order. He has not only an honor blade, but also a living shard blade.
So he's both herald and radiant.
He's both. And he is, they said that, like, there's only been one person who's sworn the fifth ideal. It was Nail. Nail is the only one to have sworn the fifth ideal. The I am the law ideal. Which only somebody as fucking self-righteous as Nail could swear an ideal that is, I am the law.
Well, yeah, but also if if you are the law, then why do you have to get permission from all these local authorities to do executions anyway?
I think that's his madness more than anything. He speaks of his own, like, he speaks of the fifth ideal as, like, this is what allows him to be selective about what laws he enforces. But to murder somebody, he still needs, like, to be enforcing a law. It's just, like, he's selective about which ones he's enforcing and which ones he'll let slide. You know, he might let a thief leave if it means that he can get to a Radiant, because in his opinion, the Radiant is the important thing. And that's where the fifth ideal comes in, where he's not bound by the letter of the law, and he does get a little bit of his own personal interpretation. I really, really want Zeth to get a shard blade, because I want Zeth to dual wield Nightblood and a shard blade,
because
that'd be fucking dope.
That would be cool.
Two? Obviously, Nail is the only one that has a shard blade and a honor blade, but Nail is not the only person we know that has two blades. Because Amaram has the one that he got from Kaladin, and earlier in the book, Dalinar returned Oathbringer to Amaram, because Amaram is the working High Prince Sadeas.
So he has two shard blades.
He does. We don't know if that he can use both of them,
because they're both dead blades, so probably not.
Well, they're both dead blades, and also, how is a dude going to swing two massive shard blades around?
Oh, that's
around,
true,
know? Like, it's just, it's kind of impractical.
Because Nightblood isn't massive. He's just a regular size sword.
No. Nightblood is a regular size sword.
But also, they could... Oh, wait, no, you can only do that with a living blade. Never mind.
Yeah, but if Zeth got a living blade through his like, Radiant, through being a Skybreaker, he could change the size
of
it.
Yeah, yeah.
So he could...
Only living blades can do that. The dead blades can't do that.
Yes. Next time is really just kind of a in-between episode to get us to the end of the part. I'm looking at this, like, a third of next time's episode is the episode that we kind of don't need to do, because you know, or is kind of the part that we don't need to do, because you know that Dalinar is going to figure out that Vaendar isn't where they need to go.
Yeah,
because,
so we can probably just skip over or summarize it.
If we don't finish next time, then the tease I'm going to give you is that there's a really good Dalinar scene coming up that is not the one that you already know about. It's one that I really like.
Is it the scene where he finds out the most important thing a man can do?
No, I'm just going to tell you now, that's set up for the end of the book. At this point, there's going to be pretty much one more reveal, and then the rest of this is getting everybody ready for the final climax of the book.
Yeah.
We have a Discord server. The link is in the episode description. You guys can follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. And as always, our cover is made by our good friend Alx at Alx_BigBoy. Go drop them a follow. Thanks guys so much for listening. As always, life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.